Lounge News Bong is brought to you by ShivadasGlass.com. S-H-I-V as in victory, A-D-A-S, Glass. Online, internet, worldwide shipping, the very first glass cannabis consumption outlet where you can get fine, artistic, hand-blown glass from artisans in Eugene, Oregon, delivered right to your house for your enjoyment. Thank you.
And we are back. We were back before. We didn't get all that, don't worry.
Okay, cool. Reset, what have you got in your pocket?
Yeah. Well, a couple little things I was maybe going to mention. I guess a quick one, it's kind of almost a little silly, but almost a little scary. You guys hear about this Russian robot that escaped the lab?
No.
What? No.
Do tell.
It's only about a paragraph and a half here, but the headline is Russian robot gets a few hours of freedom after escaping a lab. Robot ran away from scientists and caused a traffic jam in the city of Perm, Russia. Although that may sound like a scene from a science fiction movie, it actually happened. The robot named Promobot apparently broke free after an engineer forgot to shut the gate. The robot then found its way into the middle of a nearby street where it blocked traffic for about an hour until its battery ran out. A witness filmed the incident and posted the bizarre situation on YouTube. In the video, a policeman guards the white humanoid-looking robot while cars swerve around to avoid hitting it. According to Oleg Kvirtsev, co-founder of the company behind Promobot, the robot was learning automatic movement algorithms on a testing ground, which will be featured in an upcoming version. The company says that the machines are able to answer questions, give directions, and even recognize people. So yeah, apparently this thing's smart enough to find its way out if an engineer just kind of decides to leave the gate open. Said it only made it a distance of about 160 feet before its battery died, so I don't know if that was on a full charge or what, but there's a little video of it. Makes its way into the street and completely just stops traffic.
That sounds like the plot to Ex Machina.
No, Ex Machina?
Yeah.
Also saw a story, didn't bring it along, but MIT, you know, the big brainiac place, is utilizing the game Minecraft to test in a cognitive way AI machines.
Well, remember we had the head of the DeepMind, Google's DeepMind, attending last week's Bilderberg meeting. So there is more and more progress. Probably more in black ops than actually out in the open of these AI technologies, and they're all
this is going on in the department of or for the purpose of testing the cognitive function of the AI machines.
So
it's more of a psychology thing. Yeah. But it's legit. It's happening. Well, they're doing it, and they'll let that much out.
Well, there is that test, the test that that they have in Ex Machina is real, the Turing test, named after the code-breaking dude, I think, is it? Who was gay? Yay! Thought who was jail for it? No. but then after he's been dead for years, he got pardoned. So ultimately,
that works.
Yay! AI. It's all around us, and with advent of things like Siri and Cortina and Ask Google, that microphone's on pretty much all the time, folks. So
unless you take the battery
which
out,
which you can't do in iPhones. There's no way to get into the fuckers.
Yeah, they're removing that function.
Yeah, they're removing that ability to. But I mean that goes for pretty much all Apple devices, aren't they? They're good, but they're closed units only.
Oh. Well, honestly, it's not only Apple. I just got a new Samsung Edge phone, and I had the previous generation of the phone, and you could take the battery out of that one. But this new one, no, it's completely sealed back. You can't remove the battery from this new version.
So
it's not just
Apple. They've learned from each other how to close off to society the abilities of control, because ultimately that is a control function, isn't it? The being able to take the battery out of something. I have been really wondering about slightly off topic about the smartwatches, because in the in the legal bump in smartphones, it sort of talks about how you need to keep them away from your body. It sort of gets them, it's their loophole about RF frequencies and the potential cancer causing properties. So how do they get around that with these smartwatches? I don't know whether or not they're just Bluetooth, which is a frequency, or whether or not it is Wi-Fi, or even
I don't know.
Linked some other how, just sort of mobily.
We'll see if rashes of wrist area cancers, skin cancer, or bone cancer comes along.
It just seems odd. I mean, a few years ago I saw in the Apple shop that they were selling Wi-Fi plant devices where it would tell you if your plant needed watering. And I was just thinking, well Wi-Fi kills plants, so why would you want to put something that kills plants next to it? You're going to water it every day, really, if it needs watering every day.
How busy does somebody have to be to get a notification on their smartphone that the plant needs water? I mean, I got no kind of green thumb, but I can pour some water on a plant, on a regular basis.
All these plants keep dying.
Wow.
I
once killed an air fern. I made that up.
Actually talking about RF frequencies kind of leads into one other thing that I kind of wanted to mention.
Yeah, okay.
So the story coming out lately talking about how I think it's something. Let me bring up the actual thing here. Something like, luminous glow of the Earth's. Of the light pollution, nearly 80% of people in North America, it prevents them from seeing the Milky Way at night. And they're saying that there's so much light pollution out there that it's actually starting to I think if you live in the city, you probably already know this, that if you look up, you can't really see much in the sky. But if you go out to the country, you get an eye shot. But they're saying that, having moved away from the high-pressure sodium lights that used to be so popular, and they're moving to the LED lights, that it's actually probably something like double the amount of light pollution as they're moving towards the LED lights. And really what struck me was I think LED lights are probably not a bad idea, but I see them saying that two times the light pollution. It's like, okay, so is this going to have them suggesting we move to these compact fluorescents that we now have this RF frequencies coming off them? And if they break, they're extremely dangerous because of the mercury inside of them.
Yeah. Well, we've got those over here. Yeah.
You know, people are going to out on the streets, street lights?
No, in homes.
Oh, no, I know they're in homes, but I'm just saying, with the light pollution out there, are people going to start requesting, we want to be able to see into the stars, and so they'll offer us, compact fluorescents outside of the home, as like street lights and stuff. It's kind of something that struck me.
You're still not going to, even if there's any lights on your street, you're still not going to see them there. You still need to go out somewhere to see it really. I can see them bringing in more LEDs and also Wi-Fi enabled lamp posts that are multifunctional, as in there'll be cameras in the lamp posts.
Right, right. And gunshot sound sensors.
And also probably active denial systems.
Ooh.
Who'd have thought we'd ever be using the term multifunctional lamp post? Jeez.
Well done. That's perhaps the biggest laugh of the show, right there.
Excellent.
Anyway, that was the other one I just kind of wanted to mention, was this the light pollution deal.
The bigger the compact cities, the more light pollution in the area. And they are driving people into cities, no matter where you are on the planet. So, that sort of plays into Agenda 21, and they'll probably make the unpopulated areas, payable natural environments where you'll have to pay to go and see the Milky Way.
Nature.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah. Even the stars. Yeah. Take a bus and, Well, see, here at the ashram on the river in the 100-acre woods, we're a couple of miles from any light pollution at all. But we're in a forest. So, matter of fact, just yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. Had to have the Dish Network guy come out and relocate the Dish Network satellite dish on top of the house because the trees had grown up to the point where it was blocking the satellite signal.
There must be some big trees.
Oh yes, it's a forest. It's 100 acres of state recognized wildlife preserve.
And does it?
So there ain't no trees getting cut or animals getting killed or none of that. No hunting, no fishing off the river outside, the house. And nope. That's all state protected. We had to put a note on somebody's truck the other day, came home and saw there was an unfamiliar big old four-wheel drive truck pulled up near our mailbox. And no one around. So quite obviously, whomever drove that was trespassing. We have no trespassing signs everywhere. Beware of dog, all that stuff. And had to put a note on the truck saying, "You are trespassing on private property. If you do not have the express permission of the owner of the property, the next time your tag number is seen on this property, sheriff's deputies will be contacted to enforce trespassing violation. This is your one-time notice." So,
have you got many lights? Yeah, when it goes dark, is it properly dark in your neck of the woods then?
It's dead dark. I mean, up top the hill, well, out over the parking area of the drive, there's a, up toward the roof, there's a bulb up there that runs at night to light that area. And then up top of the hill, there's another, like a lamppost sort of thing, just right up there. But that's it, you know, unless we turn one of the door outside lights on, that's it. That's all there is.
So that is quite in the middle of the woods then.
Oh yeah, I'm not kidding. it's genuinely in the 100-acre.
How far off is the nearest city up that way then? How far off is the nearest city?
We're only about 5 minutes outside of Charleston, Illinois. So it's neat because, you know, this piece of property, people pay significant amounts of money to vacation in a place like this. And we get to wake up here every day and drive less than 5 minutes to Walmart. So it's an interesting dichotomy. Because right outside the forest, it's all very flat farmland with, you know, varying depending on the season, corn or soybeans all around for miles and miles. But we're in this river valley, and where we're at in the house is actually underground. It's a walkout basement. So we've only got one side, the back, you know, of the house itself, that faces the river, and it's right on the river. I can spit off the patio and hit the river, and it's quite a drop down to the actual physical river. You know, you're not going to walk down the bank. You'll fall down the bank. But so we're really well insulated, even when we want signal, like with the new cell phone, we can't get it. I have to drive completely off the property, out of the woods, and into the area that's, you know, farmland and open to get, and then boom, 4G, LTE, all well and good. But in the trees, no, none, nothing.
Well,
can use the Wi-Fi in the house. That's
it. That's quite a good thing, though, I think.
Yeah. We're very well insulated signal-wise, you know, except for the smart meter and the Wi-Fi.
Because actually, you know, it's better to use your Wi-Fi on your mobile rather than using the 4G data.
Data, right. Yeah. Yep, learned that pretty quick.
My last phone, the company for the first 3 months. So the contract was like you get 4 gigs of data a month, and for the first 3 months, it was unlimited. So in that 3 months, I used 55 gigs.
Oh my! Oh, wow! Well done.
I had a little competition with myself. and I get an upgrade in November, so I'm looking forward to another 3 months of unlimited data.
Data spree.
Yes.
That's very odd. Yeah, it's funny because here in the house, we also just had the Wi-Fi, you know, the online, our service provider is the phone company, because there isn't any other way out here. The local cable company doesn't come out here. And they hooked up a brand new Wi-Fi thingy.
A router.
But, yeah. And the tech said, oh, well, you might want to go to your AT&T store and pick up a signal booster that will then, you know, amplify the phone signal so that I could actually get or make a phone call or a text in the house without driving a quarter of a mile or so. You know?
Well, I mean, yeah, with various apps, you can call and text without using your mobile phone company. You know, actually using the data from your phone, you can just, if you've got internet access, I mean, smartphones, they've been rebranded, or they've been branded as smartphones, but the phone bit capability is probably the smallest component of that device. It is a handheld computer, isn't it, really?
Right. Yeah.
And the way that computing is going with the touch screens, so iPads are getting bigger and smaller, tablets and phones are getting bigger and small.
Are replacing laptops and desktops. Yeah.
The programs, the operating systems on various systems is very much it's getting away from conventional, you know, use, whereas for quite a considerable time you've been typing on the keyboard into search engines or to find web pages. Mm-hmm. Now it's pretty much touch. You know, you look at something, you know, the latest Microsoft, and the start screen does look like the devices in Idiocracy.
Oh, really?
You know, the start screen, you've got the touch screens now. I mean, pretty much the laptops as well have got touch screens. Right. And the similar colours, you get a screenshot of the computer in Idiocracy. It's just a match.
You know, Nick, one thing that's kind of crazy is, you know, if you have one of those Windows phones, like you say, it's basically the same operating system as Microsoft's new Windows 10 or whatever. It basically looks the same. And a lot of these newer tablets or whatever are coming out, you know, with the touchscreen function. So it's functioning like a phone too. But also, if you have, say, like their Xbox One, it damn near has the same operating system in it. It's set up the same with like these little blocks of pictures and stuff. And it's, I think they're all kind of meant to talk to each other, you know, so you could have those like a Xbox, a computer and a phone, and they all basically run the same operating system at this point.
Yeah. And
this Swami picked up what's referred to as a phablet by the cool kids, which just basically means a big ass smartphone. I don't have to wear the reading glasses. Or, well, that was the intention. And, you know, it's been quite the adventure learning, because I had never even held a smartphone before. I had a pager once, but, you know, none of the cell phone technology has ever has ever lived here, you know. But so it's been quite the adventure finding apps and all that assorted stuff, learning how to run the thing.
Yeah.
And then turning off the Facebook notifications. Good Lord. Bling, bling. Stop it. Shut up. Yeah. I got 5,000 Facebook friends. I don't want to be ding-donged or whatever whenever anybody does something. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. I definitely turn off all notifications from every app. Because I don't want to... when I want to go to the app, I'll go to the app. But I'm not going to be like... Forced to, because you know that technology, that notification technology, is a form of mind control, and it's very much Pavlov's dog. You hear the ding, and you go
triggers.
You get your endorphin rush.
Triggers a behavior.
Yeah, I definitely turn off all notifications to try and limit that that mind control effect. You know, but
that lesson got learned real quick in this ashram because, you know, India wakes up in the middle of the night here. And when you're a swami and you got students in India and Asia, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. Oh, good gravy. What is all this? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, would either of you like to hear, in case you hadn't yet, about the five things the Establish has slipped by you while you were focused on the Orlando shooting?
Yes, let's talk about that. Let's have a bong for that. Here we go. Yeah. Go.
Favorite part of the show right there. After any major tragedy, we develop an obsessive need to analyze, debate, and argue every conceivable aspect of what's taken place, as if time stops. That tragedy dominates mainstream and often independent media headlines for days or weeks, exhaustively positing theory after theory until the public begins to lose interest. But tragedy does not occur in a vacuum, and though it might feel as if the world pressed pause to allow society to grieve, important, pertinent issues continue to arise while our attention is trained elsewhere. As collective shock from the massacre in Orlando begins to fade, it's a good idea to review what happened as the media obsessed over the last few days. Number one. A major lawsuit exposing probable electoral fraud in 11 states could effectively alter the landscape of the presidential race. Slated to be filed by the Institute for American Democracy and Election Integrity, the lawsuit presents evidence of statistically impossible differences between exit polls and electronic vote totals. Quote, we are going to be filing a racketeering lawsuit under the Ohio racketeering law, the strongest in the country, and we can bring in every state. Our RICO statute is coextensive with the federal RICO statute, so they are nailed, end quote. Explained Cliff Arnbeck, an election attorney who chairs the Legal Affairs Committee of Common Cause Ohio and national co-chair for the Alliance of Democracy. According to computer security expert Stephen Spoonamore, when differences between exit polls and vote totals surpass 2%, it's an indication the vote needs to be examined. In fact, the U.S. government uses that margin for potentially stolen elections in other nations. For this lawsuit, results of Democratic primaries in several states far exceed the 2% margin. Discrepancies in favor of Hillary Clinton exceed 5% in Arkansas, Ohio, Texas, and Oklahoma. Massachusetts and Tennessee show discrepancies in Clinton's favor in excess of 8%. And in Georgia, the difference is 11.9%. In Alabama, that discrepancy in favor of the former Secretary of State is an astronomical 13.9%. Nothing to see here, folks. Or considering the corporate media blackout of this apparent massive fraud and its constant prattling over Clinton, it's entirely probable orchestrated thieving of the 2016 results occurred. Number two. A new study from Washington University in St. Louis exposed widely praised genetically modified golden rice has not lived up to the beneficence the industry has promised for over two decades. Syngenta's prized crop had been offered as a nutritional gold mine, with the potential to alleviate hunger and health issues in developing nations. But study results have now proven it a dud. Quote, golden rice was a promising idea backed by good intentions, explained study lead author Glenn Stone, a recognized expert in agricultural trends and humanitarian issues. Continuing, quote, in contrast to anti-GMO activists, I argued that it deserved a chance to succeed. But if we are actually interested in the welfare of poor children, instead of just fighting over GMOs, then we have to make unbiased assessments of possible solutions. The simple fact is that after 24 years of research and breeding, golden rice is still years away from being ready for release. Despite Monsanto and other GM industry proponents' repeated claims, activists have been somehow responsible for the inviability of golden rice as one possible solution to world hunger issues. The study also debunked that theory. Stone noted, quote, GMO opponents have not been the problem, end quote. Number three, a study of rape kits dating as far back as 1993, a telling detail in itself, revealed an epidemic of serial rapists that law enforcement should have known about for decades. An Ohio task force began testing over 5,000 shelved rape kits and discovered a startling number of serial rapists who have never been investigated and obviously have been granted permission to continue committing brutal assaults. Though the study focused on just one state, the Department of Justice claims over 400,000 rape kits nationally have been stuffed in police evidence rooms and never investigated. As the Free Thought Project reported, law enforcement departments around the country have abandoned investigating serious crimes like rape and murder in favor of more profitable ventures stemming from the failed war on drugs. Civil asset forfeiture allows police to rob often innocent people blind without the burden of proving any crime has been committed. So police go after small-time dealers and other minor drug criminals in order to reap the rewards. In 1965, the murder clearance rate exceeded 90%. Today, that number has fallen dramatically to just 60%. If you've been raped, the number drops to just 3%. It's as if the profitability of the drug war permits law enforcement to tell sexual assault victims, too bad, so sad. Number four, during Ramadan this year, Israel cruelly curtailed the flow of water to Palestine, leaving thousands thirsty and scrambling to find sufficient means of hydration. An apparent act of retaliation for terror attacks in Tel Aviv earlier this month, Israel dramatically cut the flow of water to some areas while halting it altogether in others. This during the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, a period of reflection and giving, and in the summertime, when daily temperatures average 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Individuals need about 7.5 liters of water per day, according to the United Nations. But Israel's restrictions have left many Palestinians with as little as 2 or 3 liters a day. Indeed, on Holocaust Remembrance Day, Major General Golan, the Israeli Army's deputy chief of staff, even likened the occupation of Palestine to 1930s Germany. Quote, "If there's anything that frightens me in the remembrance of the Holocaust, it is discerning, nauseating processes that took place in Europe in general and in Germany specifically back then, 70, 80, and 90 years ago, and seeing evidence of them here among us in the year 2016. And number five of the things you might have missed while everyone was focused on Orlando, a spate of suicides among bankers following the LIBOR interest rigging scandal had widely been reported in mainstream media as individual unrelated occurrences. Now, however, corporate media has finally changed that narrative, admitting there might be more to the fact 40 bankers have killed themselves in the wake of the scandal. In particular, 3 banker suicides in New York, London, and Siena, Italy, within 17 months over 2013 and 2014, share a commonality in connections to Deutsche Bank. In each case, the New York Post reported, the victim had a connection to a global banking scandal, leaving more questions than answers as to the circumstances surrounding their deaths. In what came to be called the LIBOR scandal, European and U.S. financial regulators uncovered a conspiracy among London bankers to rig the London Interbank Offered Rate, which determines interest rates banks charge for mortgages as well as personal and auto loans. A number of major banks, including Deutsche Bank, were forced to pay some $20 billion in fines in the wake of the LIBOR revelations. Afterward, the banker suicides began. In just one example reported by the Post, David Rossi, communications director for Italian Monte Paschi di Siena, the world's oldest bank, fell to his death under highly suspicious circumstances. Quote, a devastating security video shows Rossi landing on the pavement on his back, facing the building, an odd position more likely to occur when a body is pushed from a window. The footage shows the 3-story fall didn't kill Rossi instantly. For almost 20 minutes, the banker lay on the dimly lit cobblestones, occasionally moving an arm and a leg. As he lay dying, 2 murky figures appear. Two men appear, and one walks over to gaze at the banker. He offers no aid or comfort and doesn't call for help before turning around and calmly walking out of the alley. About an hour later, a co-worker discovered Rossi's body. The arms were bruised, and he sustained a head wound that, according to the local medical examiner report, suggested there might have been a struggle prior to the fall. Whenever tragedy strikes, a period of shock and mourning and necessary examination of the event inevitably and justifiably follows. However, it remains imperative to pay close attention to additional ongoing events which occur in the meantime. Often, opportunistic politicians take advantage of the distraction to slip unfavorable legislation through. The end.
Well, that's quite a lot of stuff trying to be pushed under the carpet whilst we're...
yeah, it is.
You know,
it's a lumpy carpet now. We could trip and hurt ourselves.
I think it was quite lumpy to begin with.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
Well, over here, on Thursday, which since has overshadowed Orlando, particularly in the UK, is the fact that this recently elected MP, Joe Cox, got gunned down by what appears to be a crazed lone gunman.
Gunned and knifed. Both.
Gunned, knifed and kicked, apparently. The eyewitnesses said that he was shouting Britain first. This has been repeated literally the clips of the interviewed people. It is just a reinforcement of this British first slogan. This was then repeated by, so unlike Orlando, the guy that stabbed and killed this MP, and who also shot some other guy, some 77-year-old guy, but he's obviously been overshadowed by the fact that an MP's been killed. When this guy, Thomas Muir, who, you know, is this very quiet guy by his by what his neighbours are saying, when he was in court today to have the charges formally brought against him, he stated his name as Britain Comes First, or Defend Britain, It Comes First, as his name. Then his lawyer had to acknowledge his name for him. There's some sort of mental health issues that are being put against this guy. There's been quite a spate of people with either undiagnosed or diagnosed mental health problems killing people in this country of late. This is another possible a case attributed to somebody with mental health problems.
Who made a homemade gun?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So a bit like is it in The Line of Fire where John Malkovich makes the balsa wood gun to get through the metal detectors.
Yep. Well, he made a homemade gun because, you know, he can't get a pistol there. So,
you can get guns if you're licensed. You know, if you're licensed to a gun club, you can, they do have them over here. We do have, licensed firearms, but it's just very, very restricted. You've got to be, a member of, some sort of gun club. But there's plenty of guns that can be acquired on the streets as well. So whether or not you can get them on the streets of Batley is another thing.
You know,
can I
one
ask
thing
you
that's
something
a little scared
from the? Excuse me, just a moment, Reese.
Go for it.
In the coverage of this, Sonic, they kept mentioning that Mrs. Joe Cox, not a man, a woman, J-O, was killed outside her constituency surgery. What does that mean?
It means like an MP surgery is where they've got an office and members of a constituency is an area covered by that MP.
Right.
And so the surgery is where they go and take questions and hear.
Oh, okay. So we were it's just an office.
Yeah. But
there's nobody getting cut.
No,
right?
No. No, surgery is.
Well, it says surgery. What do you do? To me, you get surgery, you're bleeding. That's.
But.
Okay.
But then we call a doctor's. Over here, the medical center, another name for that is a doctor's surgery. So the surgery bit is the taking questions.
Got different content.
Yeah. So, and you've got to have an appointment to. So she'd been, taking questions. And apparently she was quite well liked within her constituency. She had been, there's the referendum debate going on over here, and I think she'd been voted to stay in, and maybe, so that would concur with this guy saying Britain First. And Britain First is a rather racist group over here, of mainly England centric folks because
now would the killer be represent or attempting to represent the exit point of view?
Well, that is how it's being presented. Whether or not this guy is or I don't know because we've only been presented with a picture of this guy. And that's it really. We've not been really told much apart from of what you said then and his neighbour's accounts of him living on his own, keeping himself to himself, actually doing some sort of community work. So he wasn't noted as an oddball in some respects, but he was just a guy living on his own. So whether or not this guy has just flipped, because all accounts he just quite calmly walked up did this and then, was quite calm afterwards, which, that sort of alarm bells ring there into some sort of triggered.
Right.
Which.
Sirhan kind of thing.
And, we've seen the effects of psychotropic drugs on certain folks. Whether or not this happened to be some actual psychotic episode, or whether or not this is like some sort of triggered akin episode to a psychotic. If it had been triggered somehow, who can tell?
Well, Sonic and this Swami have both, and Sonic still does, work with people with mental difficulties of varying degrees and types. And we can both tell you, once someone launches into a violent behavior that requires restraint or, some intervention, they don't get back to calm right away. And allegedly, the way this sounds, this guy walked up, shot this woman three times, once at least, in the face, then went to stabbing her with a foot-long knife and kicking her, and then all of a sudden, he's calm?
Yeah.
That doesn't... No.
So there's that... They're coming from that end, the normal reactions of somebody, if you can say normal, if you can say somebody murdering somebody is normal, there'd be some sort of adrenaline function in there.
Yes.
So
right.
You'd, I don't know.
They'd be all shaky and sweaty and,
So then we've got to come from the other side. Why has this woman been targeted? Was it random, or was it somehow premeditated and orchestrated that we've got to maybe look into this lady's background. She was Cambridge educated, then worked for Oxfam and some other NGOs. Her husband apparently was some sort of one of Gordon Brown's aides, he's just come out today. He's wife just died, and he's issuing some statement about immigration. Keep grieving for your wife and support your kids,
right?
Please, you don't need to be in any, just go and have some private time there.
Really? How much time we got left?
We've got 6 minutes. Relating to this story, the day that this story broke, there was a bizarrely synced story from Australia where a politician, this is in a re-election campaign, he, in a video that he'd made, he thought that this was a good idea. Not only did he think it was a good idea, but it just happened to come out on the same day as this happening. He made a video of him shooting his, pictures, like targets of his election, the other election candidates. So he's got a gun, he's shooting target boards of with pictures of his opponents, and this broke on the day that an MP over here gets shot. Very, very bizarre how that happened.
We don't really have the time to fully go into this, but we'll promo for next week. The Vatican has come up with a brand new way to take advantage of social media. So we'll promo that and go into that in detail next week. Also, coming up today in just, actually starting now, Donald Trump is doing a rally in Phoenix, and a group of bikers, motorcycle guys, are gathering to protect Trump supporters from violent leftists. So we'll see how that plays out.
So, before we head out, a brilliant story came across my computer screen this week, and with all the bad news pumped at us, I thought this was just a brilliant story, and sort of lifts, shows the humanity of people, even when they're using the internet. This Gran from Wigan, I think she was, had put into, she's, trying to translate something on Google. And so she puts into Google, please, can you translate these Roman numerals? And then she wrote whatever it was, thank you. So she'd left that search up, and her grandson had come round and thought, oh, bless, she's pleased and thank you, Google. And so he taken a picture and tweeted it, and it had gone viral, this. And so Google came across it and then wrote back to her, thanking her for making them smile. But how lovely is a gran who asks, please and thank you.
I'd seen the picture. I didn't know that Google actually responded to her.
Yeah, they'd responded that in a world of a billion searches, yours made us smile. I think that was the quote. we've got a couple of minutes left, so I mean we could either just keep talking and I'll play the intro again. Yeah, we could do that because we've got not enough.
Well, Reset, you got anything in the final minutes since you're new back with us?
Well, I guess one little one I was going to mention was a news story came across my radar earlier. I guess they were doing a study that shows that psilocybin mushrooms might actually have some properties that can help with addiction of various sorts.
Yes, and help people with mental health problems people with terminal conditions to come to peace with life and such. I think I fully concur with the potential benefits of limited mushroom ingestion. Definitely.
Yeah, I hadn't read too much into it about like quantities or anything like that. Just pretty much that, this girl, she'd been smoking since the age of 12. And I think at the age of 23, someone, she entered a study and they were, giving people certain amounts of, psilocybin. And she imagined herself as some kind of purple flower rising up and, occurred to her that there's so many silly things on the face of the planet that you just don't need to deal with. And it occurred to her that the strangest thought was her huddled up in a corner puffing on a cigarette. That it was just a weird image to her, and it wasn't something that she ever wanted to do again.
There's another hallucinogenic substance, I believe it's called Imboga, that comes from Africa, that has been used with great success in helping people with addiction issues and other various things. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we've come almost to the end of 2 hours. That has flown by, guys. We won't be...
Big news week.
I will be on holiday for the next 2 weeks. So if you want to do a show, but you probably won't.